You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
Welcome back, friends. Please make sure your pod seats and tray tables are in their upright and locked position. The airlock has been sealed and docking clamps have been released for an on-time departure. The Functional Nerdverse. So this is Functional Nerdverse 2026, huh? It's kind of roomy.
Yeah. And for the very first episode with a guest for 2026, of course, as soon as I start and hit and we go, Ronan starts barking.
Well, I mean, he wants us to know that he made it. He survived the fireworks. He's here in 2026. It's all good.
Either yeah. That or a tree moved slightly outside because of the
wind. That is also possible.
And he felt that there was danger.
Well, yeah. I'm with my mother's dog right now, and there are snowmobilers that are going up and down the roads of northern Michigan right now. So constant barking. If you hear that, that's Bailey.
Those aren't people riding snowmobiles. Those are enemies. They're dangerous to the house.
Dangerous. Well, they are technically on my mom's property when they probably shouldn't be. So.
That dog probably thinks that he's in like a 007 film and that those are like Russian agents or something chasing someone down. That dog lives a very exciting mental life.
He watches a lot of TV with my mom.
There you go.
So he might think we're in a James Bond movie.
I love that. So that voice that I'm loving here and the conversation I'm loving here is coming from Katie Cook, who, if you are into webcomics, you may know of, especially because you had a gigantic Kickstarter success. Way to go.
I did.
In October, funded just about every blessed thing under the sun for Nothing Special. And so congratulations. And here we are to talk about how Nothing Special is going. So how's it going?
It's going at its own speed right now. You know, I've been doing Nothing Special with Webtoon for about 7 years now, kind of on and off. And I left working on IDW's My Little Pony to do my own project because Webtoon, when they started to do a Western version of their site, because in Korea, they are so popular. Oh, my God. They asked me if I wanted to do a project with them and, you know, even though the pay is okay, you know, they said you can do whatever you want.
Oh, that's very different than IP work.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd been doing Star Wars kids books. I'd been doing My Little Pony. You know, I've done the on and off project, little projects for Marvel. I've worked on Disney. And that carrot of whatever you want. Is a lot, you know, because I started with a webcomic way back in the day, back when I was in college. And I was in college from 2000 to 2004. And that was Gronk, which was my first webcomic. And I mean, I kickstarted those books before Kickstarter was a thing. I posted on the following it had on my live journal. I would say, guys, PayPal me $20-$25, depending on where you live. I'll keep a list. And when I hit $7,000, I can just go to the printer and get it printed and ship them, because my book printer, I used people that were in Michigan near me so I could go see the process and be involved in it. That was how I did the first three books of Gronk, just through LiveJournal.
Can I just say, as we're launching into 2026, I do miss LJ.
It was just a nice lawn format thing. It was simple and it was totally fine. And I'm at a point now where I am such an old lady. I'm in my 40s. And whenever there's another social media thing that I have to go do as part of my job, I hate it. I'm so bad. I will not sign up for TikTok. I have refused.
Okay, so that's interesting. One of the questions I was going to ask, actually, is given that you have been in on the ground level and above of webcomics really since their earliest days, I am really interested in your bead on how that genre has been pushed around or shaped or influenced by all these different video-driven social medias.
Yeah, and I have a great interaction about that because – a few months ago, they did a web Comic-Con in Ferndale, and it had like the Awkward Yeti, Foul Language, Nathan Pyle, who does Strange Planet, And a lot of the more successful, you know, young people webcomics, ADHD Dinosaur. And I talk to these people who their entire comic is built just on that rapid fire social media. And, you know, they're like, well, I got to post to Reddit. And these are the times I have to post it to Reddit. These are the times I have to post it to Twitter. This is the time I have to do for this. And they keep going on and on. And then talking about how Patreon is how they make the majority of their income. And I'm sitting there as the old person going, I already did this. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it again. I can't put myself through that again because it is so grueling.
Yeah.
To try and be viral. And some people are amazing at making it look flawless. And some people, it's like a bad reel that is so forced, saying, this is what happened at my wedding.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, I already feel like I did that. And I'm stuck in, you know, this thing of, these are my pictures. These are my stories. I already did all the hard work telling you about them in the first place and then making them. And now you want me to do more?
Yeah.
So I stick to the more narrative ones. Like I have a blue sky because I won't post on Twitter anymore. And, you know, I have a Facebook because I'm old. And I have Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that's because I have to.
Yeah.
Those are the bases that you have to keep a social media. Because even when you're pitching a book now, they want to know your social media accounts.
Yep.
Same thing with ReadPop. If you're applying for a table in Artist Alley, they want your socials. And they want to know how many followers you have. They want to see what kind of interaction they're going to be getting, you know, if you are given a table. Or if you're given the opportunity to pay $600 for a table. So I'll do the bare minimum. I'll poke around and every once in a while I'll pop up somewhere and I'm like, I have a great answer to that question.
Yeah.
By the way, my name is Katie Cook. And it is because I'm just so old and I'm not a content creator. I hate when I post a piece of artwork and they're like, oh, that's great content. And it was like, bitch, I will cut you. It's like, do not call me a content creator. I am a cartoonist. I'm an artist. I'm a creator, but I'm not creating.
Content can be kind of anything,
know,
right? It's like, it feels this side of the word filler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the way that people refer to content creator now is, oh, you're a good YouTuber. You're a good personality.
TikToker.
You are a good person that can make something 15 seconds long that I will forget about. And I've really dug in my heels to be the opposite of that, especially with Nothing Special. You can really tell with the artwork now, you know, because my artwork has always been very line-based, very simple. But there's a complexity to it. There's a draftsmanship to it. And I just went whole hog on it. Like 2 years ago, you know, I had gone on hiatus for a year already because I was really rewriting the story because I wasn't happy with it. And I'm not one of those people that can do a webcomic week to week and say, now the story will go here. Very choose your own adventure. Mm-hmm. Mine is very planned out. The structure is 500 post-it notes that I'm arranging and doing everything with until I write the final script. And I have the final script ready before I draw the first panel. And I took a pause because I actually like had a, this isn't my vision diva moment. and was like, I got to fix this. And then I just disappeared for a little while. And then I had a medical incident where I was in a wheelchair. I was paralyzed from the mid thigh down in both legs. And it forced me while I was working to just sit at my computer and draw instead of going stir crazy. And that's where you get what my artwork looks like now. If you go look at the panels that I've done previews of, they're enormous and detailed and these really realized world building moments all mixed in with where the characters are standing. And I went full Sergio Aragonés in a time where I spent way more time than he does on things and really shot myself in the foot. But as we start getting these people that are using canned backgrounds in their comics or, you know, taking all these shortcuts of copying and pasting the same panel, but putting different dialogue in, or using 3D models from Clip Studio Paint that they're just tracing, I went completely in the other direction. I went from being able to draw, you know, these quick 30, 40 panels in a week, but then they would take a week to then color and letter through someone else, the people that I hire. It is now 2 weeks for me to draw 30 to 40 panels because they are just monsters. And every single time I add one more stupid detail that doesn't need to be there, it's like I'm just leaning into fuck AI, fuck all these people that use all of these shortcuts. We're not going to have any draftsmen left in 20 years. And like, I just, the more cantankerous I am that day, the more stuff I put in a panel.
So I think you've set up in a really kind of fun way.
By the way, Tracy, I just do want to throw out that she's giving me flashbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
She is giving me flashbacks to when I had a webcomic. This is not. Yeah.
You went to the bad headspace.
Yeah. Because I didn't draw myself. I had an artist that mm-hmm. I was working with. Mm-hmm. And that ended up being a nightmare for me. Yep. And I don't know if he still listens. He might still listen. But yeah, because it was like I would write scripts and I would give them to him and he would come back. He's like, I don't understand this. This isn't funny. I'm like, no, it's funny. Trust me, it's funny. He's like, no. And then he would change things, just change it. And then he was always running late. And we just clashed all the time. And so eventually it just died. But yeah.
I clash with myself.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the world around me.
Deeply internalized clashing.
Every TikTok video is an affront to nature. So we need to spend more time on things that are considered a craft. I don't know. But some people are amazing at making that 20 seconds of content and mm-hmm. I just can't be that person anymore.
So you've done a great job of setting us up for this like vibe of your commitment to the content and the story. And so starting at the ground level for folks who have not been following Nothing Special over the last 7 years, who the idea of it of you compiling these volumes is news mm-hmm. to them, give them the, yeah. Got it. At risk of making things back more into this kind of like content language, an elevator pitch.
No, I trust me.
No,
that one's been around forever. It can stay. I wanted to, you know, when given the freedom of like, what do you want to make? You know, if you were given anything, and I wanted to make a story that I would have wanted to read when I was about 12, 13, 14, you know, when back in my day, we didn't have the access to a lot of the graphic novels that are more, teen focused, female focused, whatever you want to, even though I consider mine all gender, all ages. But there wasn't that thing for me that I loved. You know, I had Archie available to me. And when manga started to trickle into the US, you know, I loved Fruits Basket. I have all the original volumes that I bought at Borders, they all still have their Borders sticker on the back, you know, when they had translations come available. And that was like before the real internet days. So it was, you know, you looked in the book catalog and you're like, oh, a new volume is coming out. And I was lucky that, you know, I grew up in Ann Arbor where Borders started and the flagship Borders store is right in downtown Ann Arbor. And they had like a comic section in that, like not what a typical bookstore would have, which would be like an Archie Digest or, you know, all the Garfield books, which I had, by the way, all of them. But, you know, I wanted to create something that was for me back then looking for that book. And I wanted to do like a magical world because I love fantasy. I love Lord of the Rings. I love, you know, the idea of any opening of a drawer or door or sliver through you know, a crack in our world leads to something else. Those are my favorite kinds of stories, is that we are here, but there's still something else there. So I've started going in that direction. And, you know, I started adding, you know, the male lead, who is essentially playing the role that all of the females usually play in a fantasy story. He's a beautiful trophy, who is also very content and smart and aware. But he is part of the adventure, you know, that she is going on. That's more her journey. And then I focus more on everyone else's, you know, character relationships later on. And at the heart of it, Nothing Special is a fantasy story, but it's a character-driven story. There's a lot of conversations. There's a lot of interactions that are subtle, that are part of the world building. And, you know, that's, again, it was the type of book I wanted. So I very selfishly made a story for me. And I'm very lucky that so many people have connected to it. Because it would have really hurt my feelings.
Rude.
And I tell everybody that, you know, I built the title as Nothing Special after writing it all out. One, because it fits the story and her character so well in the beginning. But two, I had a bad review built in. So it was like every single website could have just been like, Katie Cook's new project, it's Nothing Special. And I prepared myself for that, but it was really well received. You know, I love making it. I've seen cosplayers at conventions. Oh, I get all cool. This cute fan art.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are collected in the, and there's three volumes of it right now that are out that are through 10 Speed, which is a imprint of Random House. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get to go into a Barnes & Noble and see my books on the shelf and be like, eh. I go sign them all. Whenever I'm in a bookstore, I sign them.
Nice.
And, you know, for me, having that book, being the old person that I am, that made it more real for me. Yeah. So I know some people love reading it just online. But in the collected trades, they are completely reformatted. There's a lot of new artwork. So I could think more about page transitions instead of the scroll and the artwork. So it was basically like rewriting the whole thing. And then, patching in art and changing things. Every instance, and I know this is, you know, a weird detail, but I'm going to put it out there. One of my children is trans. And whenever I put them in the book, earlier on, I have swapped out their gender for all of the print issues.
That's cool.
Which they didn't ask me to do, but they were very thrilled that I did that for them. So, but it gives you a chance to go back and change the story to make it right for that format. You know, and I did that for that. I did it for characters. I added moments. I took moments out. I took artwork out. You know, all those huge transitional panels with the big crazy artwork that's all drippy. All that goes away. 60 hours of inking out the window because I don't know where to put it. That'll be the edits. Oh, God, the Snyder cut of Nothing Special with all the dark, creepy
shit.
See,
but I went to a different place. I was thinking George Lucas. Because you're making it like your vision.
Hang on a sec. The difference is, though, when George Lucas started messing around with the stuff, he made it kind of shitty. Yeah. He should have just kind of left it the way it was.
On who you ask. If you ask George Lucas...
I mean,
Han needed to step on that tail.
So I think here's the thing. I'm glad you're bringing
that. Hold on. You know why? Honestly, do you know why Han had to step on the tail?
As a power move? Was he being a dick?
No,
I don't know.
Because when they replaced human with a Hutt, there's now a tail. Right. So you can't just have – and in the shot, Han walks behind the human. Mm-hmm. That they had playing Jabba.
That's
why they had – I mean, it's stupid. I'm not defending it, but I am saying like there was a reason. Like they basically just took him and they just made him go up and over and it was just – Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Tracy. I interrupted you.
Well, you bringing up George Lucas here relative to Katie's decisions is interesting for me because I think there's this relationship that fans develop to source material, right? And it's reflected in me being like, well, George Lucas made everything suck, right? And like that being my reaction. And so one of them is like this preciousness about the experience that I had of this material is the Ur experience. It's like the pure, unadulterated and unfiltered experience. And then the artist returns to the work. They make adjustments to it. They make evolutions to it that are reflective of fill in the blanks here, whatever the changes of vision might be. I think the extent to which those are well received often is a testament to the extent to which individual fans trust their creator.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Especially,
and I think in the George Lucas case, I don't know that there'd been a lot of trust in some respects in the long-term management of storytelling and so on. And I will venture to guess that your fans probably have more trust in you, Katie.
Yeah. And especially cause when I go on hiatus, because I'll do a big chunk and then put it out week to week for like 6 months to a year. And then I'm gone for like another year. And I let everybody know it's because I'm going to do it right. And like I said, I used to draw so fast because, you know, I had that little bit of detail in there. But, you know, again, I just had that moment of if I focused on what I like to draw about this more, I'm going to get more out of it for me. And I think everybody else is going to get more out of it. You grow all the time, like even as an adult artist, because I hate the stuff I did 7 years ago. I hate the stuff I did 2 weeks ago. But when I'm doing something right in front of me, you know, just being able to be like, the line art in this is real nice, guys. And it's because I didn't rush it. It's because I went in and I did it right and not trying to rush out a product. I joked with my editor when they're like, what the hell? What are you doing? And I'm like, you have to remember that I am an artisanal goat cheese at a nice little like county, like farmer's market. That lady is only there every once in a while. But when you see her, you're like, oh my God, gotta go get it.
It's the goat lady.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, I aim to be that right now. You know, I've done my stint of Katie Cook is a reliable person to just get this done. And I'm really ready to just show people that even though my artwork is stupid and simple and I put a lot of fart jokes and butt jokes and things, it's still art. There's still craftsmanship behind it. And I've gotten a lot of people that I talk to that are younger because I've done a lot of college talks lately, which is kind of fun. And they say, you know, I'm worried about my style. I'm worried about my style. And I've never really thought much about style because you develop it as you go and you can see your influences in it. And I think what I've been putting out in the past year is finally, oh, that's how I draw. And it took me over 40 years to get there. But yeah, I'm finally like, I just love what I'm doing and I'm excited about it when I do post about it online. And I think people are excited just at this prospect that I've spent all of this time on something that I know they're going to read quickly, but I still put everything into it because they're reading it. Mm-hmm. So tears down the eyes, crying.
If you make me watch the Snyder Cut again, I'll cry.
I would. I wouldn't even.
No,
not even on a plane.
Locked in a tube at 30,000 feet. No, not gonna do it. I'm already being tortured enough.
Speaking of social media, as I switched to Snyder, there was a when they released the trailer for Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, and spoiler alert, they show Lobo, right?
Yeah.
And they're showing Jason Momoa as Lobo. Snyder fans took to social media going, oh my God, this is so terrible. Jason Momoa has taken this role as this unknown character.
What?
When he could have been playing, you know, Aquaman. And people are going, how stupid are you?
Oh,
you don't know who Lobo is? It's like, if there is perfect casting, it's Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool, and it's Jason Momoa and Lobo. Like, that is perfect casting.
Yeah. You have to separate. There's people that are fans of the visual, like mm-hmm. the cinematic media and TV shows, and that's completely separate from the comic fan.
Yeah.
Like, you have to just say, okay. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. You are allowed to be a fan of whatever you want, except killing puppies. Okay?
Yeah, there's the line.
Mm-hmm. But I don't care if you love DC, but all you've seen are the TV shows. I love comic books. I actually don't read a lot of superhero books. But, you know, I love comics. I have so many comics. But I will read some of the big events, or if I have an artist on something that I really love, you know, if Tom King and Mitch Gerard did it, I'm buying it.
Mm-hmm.
Or Batman and Elmer Fudd, which I believe is the most perfect book that DC has ever put out. And I'll fight people over that with me not knowing a lot about DC books. But no, it's a weird thing to see people online be so confidently incorrect.
Yeah.
And I try not to engage all the time, because you see it in Star Wars, you see it in, you know, all the comics, you know, media stuff. And I did get into it. The only thing that I think I know more about than most people was Fraggle Rock.
Oh, yeah. Because
when I was working on the Fraggle Rock books back when Archaea was kind of in its own thing and they were doing the Fraggle Rock stuff, I put in Moki's her plant Langford, which looks kind of like the Super Mario like fire plant.
Piranha plant, yeah.
And I got a note saying to take out the scary plant. And I was like, actually, Langford is introduced. And after that, their licensing department used to ask me questions to confirm things while they were in the middle of bringing back Fraggle Rock. And it was like, oh, this is the one thing I know about. Oh, no.
Yeah. I've talked about it before. Like, one of the first things I ever wrote was fan fiction for Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And there was a fanzine, and they reached out to me and asked me if I would write something for them. And I said, sure, because I was a fan of the character Sabek, who was introduced in Wrath of Khan. And then if you read the book by Diane Duane, you find out – or I think she wrote one of them, and maybe Vonda McIntyre wrote another one. But I don't remember who did the novelization of the book, but I think Diane Duane wrote a separate novel about it, about Sabek. You find out that, you know, she's half Vulcan, half Romulan. And I was just very curious about this character. And so I had written some stuff. And this fanzine reaches out, but they have a new editor. I write this story. I send it to him. He comes back and he's like, you can't just invent pet names for people in Star Trek. And I'm like, what's he talking about? And he's like, at one point you have Spock calling Savik Savakam. And you can't do that. You can't just make up stuff. And I went back and I'm like, and this is like way before screenshots or anything else. And I'm like, if you watch Wrath of Khan and you go to this point in this movie and you look at the subtitles, guess what? It's Savakam.
Nice. That's one of speaking of Star Trek fan fiction, which always brings up a topic. That's the one thing. Again, it's an old lady thing. Conventions, when they used to be like really small and dinky and
yeah.
Like
before creation.
Yeah, creepy. Yeah. There was a guy at Motor City Comic Con, which was the one that I always went to as a kid, because, you know, my mom, big Star Trek person, like even back then. There was a guy, he sold his Star Trek fan fiction that he would like write on a little word processor or a typewriter, and he would sell copies of his self-insert fan fiction.
Oh my God.
Star Trek. And we bought some. Like when I was a kid. And of course, my parents immediately took them away going, oh my. But as I got older and I kept going to Motor City just every year, I would always buy one from him and give it to my brother for Christmas. And when they start charging for tables because Comic-Cons are so popular, he went away.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's a part of me that's like, dude, I'll pay your $125 if you come back. I don't know how to get a hold of you. Your name's not on any of these.
Yeah. I was all of 16 years old. Mm-hmm. When this happened,
old and creepy. So.
Well, here's the thing, and so I write a Star Trek story that I thought was pretty good, and you know, it's a mirror universe. Savick kind of crosses over into main universe, and shenanigans happen, and it becomes the cover of this fanzine, which blew my mind. And so I'm like, oh, this is cool. I bought a bunch of copies. Mm-hmm. Every other story in that magazine was some kind of sex going on. I mean, every other story. And I'm like, holy crap. What are these? Spock would never do that. You know? Yeah.
That's illogical.
Oh, no.
That doesn't go there.
I would like a t-shirt that says Spock would never. How dare.
Yeah. Fun times.
Oh, my God. That's So, okay. So now I feel like we've done the whole we mentioned Motor City Comic Con and kind of, mm-hmm. So what's baby's first comic then?
It was newspaper comics.
Yeah.
You know, I was a latchkey kid. My mom was, mm-hmm. The vice principal of a middle school, Romulus, just outside of Detroit. My dad was an engineer at General Motors, and they both left super early for work, but they would get all of us up like super early with them. So while they got ready for the day, we would sit at the kitchen table and I would read the funny pages of the Detroit Free Press, mm-hmm. every, yep. single day. And then every single weekend, I would want the Sundays, and my mom, my dad, and I would all take a turn with the comics. So really it was, I wanted to be Bill Watterson, yeah. when I was a, yeah. kid. That's who I wanted to be. And, you know, I loved Peanuts. I loved Foxtrot. Of course, Garfield back in the day when he was everywhere.
Mother Goose and Grimm. I dug that one.
I loved Mother Goose and Grimm. And, you know, that was my church. You know, we weren't like churchy people growing up, but I would say that was like the most sacred ritual of my day is, you know, I eat my peanut butter toast and I read the comics while I waited for my parents to drop me off at school while it was still dark out. So it was, I wanted to be a newspaper cartoonist, like my whole childhood. We have a picture somewhere in this house, because I'm at my mom's house right now, of me holding one of those little placards in kindergarten. And it says, I want to be a cartoonist. So it's really good that this has worked out because I have no backup plan. I have no life skills. I will be the first person to die in a zombie apocalypse. All I can do is draw. Fart jokes. That's it. But that was like my attitude growing up is like, I just want to be a cartoonist and I love to draw. I love to make my own little gag comics all the time. I have notebooks full of them from when I was a kid. And eventually I started, you know, looking into what art degrees could be. And my parents, every step of the way, were like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever you want to do. It's like your older brother is getting a degree in philosophy. You think we're going to care if you get a BFA? It's like he set the bar low. So they were always like, okay, do what you want. And by the time I got to college and I went to CCS in Detroit, College for Creative Studies, and I was going to get an illustration degree, newspapers started to die. The internet was really coming into its own in that point, you know, and it was like, wait a minute, this whole career path that I was like, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to, you know, refine my skills. I am going to focus on making this like comic and I'm going to submit it to all the syndication people. Oh, what do you mean that all of these newspapers are cutting their comics left and right? They're trying to take it down from 2 black and white pages down to 1. Right now. So everybody's like getting cut. And I was like, what?
Now it's like a half a page.
Yeah.
But I'm in the college now to do, mm-hmm. the thing. So I focused more on illustration because I was like, well, I can always do book illustration. I took one class in medical illustration, which turns out I'm really squeamish. not going to do it. I don't even like thinking about what's under there. I don't know. I don't care. So yeah, I always was like, oh, maybe I'll end up doing like comic books. I can draw like Dan DiCarlo if I need to. I'll go crawl into Archie. But I just started to develop more of my own characters. I met a lot more people that were nerdy creatives. You know, I went to school outside of Ann Arbor in a really tiny town called Saline. So even though we had, you know, Detroit right there and Ann Arbor right there, I was in this little like rural place 20 minutes away. And I didn't graduate with a lot of people. And, you know, we had like the one other art kid, but he only drew dinosaurs. I didn't care about that. So yeah, when I got to college and I met other people that were interested in comic books, that's when I started to see more of Spider-Man, Batman, very Jim Lee era stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I love cross-hatching, but do you guys know who Walt Kelly is?
And then you saw Todd McFarlane and said, that just looks exhausting.
It's like, oh, and now I end up doing that kind of stuff. Like not to this like dark, creepy level, but I'm like, you know what? I can add five more lines to this.
It can be weird. You can be Rob Liefeld and have no idea how a foot is put together. Like, see, you don't even know that
foot exists. I, like, that's another t-shirt I would like. It was like, let's ease up on Rob. If I am going to be judged by the artwork I did in my uninformed 20s, shoot me now. Just, yeah. Walk me out into the middle of the Michigan northern woods, which I'm there right now, and let the Yetis take me. but, you know, I did tell the comic art fans guys at a San Diego dinner once, was like, you would make so much money if you let every artist pay you $500 to forever remove one piece of their old artwork from your site. Just something from our past that needs to go away.
Do you know what yours is?
I do know what mine is.
Okay, I'm assuming that that a lady doesn't tell.
I'm not going to tell. I'll tell you what Andy Price's is. So,
oh, okay, all right. Yeah. Sorry, Andy.
Andy is one of my absolute best friends on the planet, and I worked with him on My Little Pony as him as my other half on that project for like almost a decade, but. Before Andy found his success in My Little Pony, considering he is a Kubert School graduate, you know, he knows how to do all of this dark, creepy, wonderful line art, you know, loves Bernie Wrightson type stuff. To earn some money while at Motor City Comic Cons, there is a gentleman who loves to commission Batgirl getting spanked.
Oh, God.
That's the theme. And that's okay. The one that Andy would have removed from comic art fans.
Okay, so for the benefit of one of our patrons, which version of Batgirl?
Old one. Oldest version, good. The TV show version.
Yvonne Gregg. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I think this is more on the collector than it is on the people that draw. Because every once in a while, if someone is like, I will give you $300.
Yeah, poverty is like, a hostage situation. Yeah.
So I'm gonna throw that into the pile of things that I did not know existed, along with I did not know that some Magic the Gathering diehards will pay artists to custom art.
Oh, yeah.
Their favorite cards. Yeah. I did not know that that existed.
Mm-hmm. I've done a couple of them. I do like little cutesy versions of them. I did one of the Black Lotus ones for somebody once to make a little fake card, nice. And it was like I bet you wish I was real.
I did want to go back to the newspaper for a second because, again, being the oddball in my family, I loved the comics in the newspaper as well. Yeah. But the one that I glommed onto and the one that I loved was Bloom County.
I liked Bloom County. You know, yeah. I've always liked Bloom County.
I did too. Mm-hmm. I have a cat named Opus, so obviously. Nice. Yeah.
My mom, I would read that and she tagged on the fact that I did like Garfield. I liked Garfield. Mm-hmm. And Garfield, she could understand. And my grandmother, like Garfield, she could understand. And so they bought me a lot of Garfield stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was everywhere at the time.
Yeah, but it wasn't until I had my own money that I started buying the Bloom County books. Mm-hmm. And then they're going, what? Really?
Well, like, it's Bloom County was always too smart for me.
Yeah.
It was this thing of like, well, this is funny. Oh, that's thoughtful funny. Yeah. I don't really know if we can do that.
And both,
then as
both,
you get older, you learn that Calvin and Hobbes is thoughtful funny.
Yeah.
It's just so subtle about it.
And both Bill Amell and Berkeley Breathed are on Facebook and pushing out new stuff on Facebook. So there's Foxtrot on Facebook, and there's he doesn't call it Bloom County anymore. He calls it something else, but it's the same characters.
Yeah.
See, I fear interacting with some of these cartoonists that I loved as a kid, as a cartoonist now.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah, because there's like, oh, what if they're a dick? What if they're a dick? Exactly. Or what if I fuck up? Because I have. Yeah. I've had interactions with people where I just blanked.
He will never hear this, so yeah. I tell the story all the time. The first comic book that someone gave me that got me into buying comic books was G.I. Joe. Someone gave me G.I. Joe, the Silent Interlude issue. And I was like, I'd never seen anything like that before. And so I started immediately getting into comics, and I started buying G.I. Joe quite a bit. So, huge fan of Larry Hama.
Yeah.
And when we started this podcast, before Tracy, Anilio and I started the podcast, one of the things that I wanted to talk to Larry Hama. And so I reached out to Larry Hama, and I'm like, hey, I'd love to have you on the podcast. He said, I'll come on the podcast anytime you want. I'm like, great. He's like, but I will never talk about G.I. Joe.
Wah, wah.
And I went, aw. And he's like, yeah. Let me tell you how they fucked me over.
There you go.
I was like, uh-oh.
Talk Captain about America chair.
So
I took a screen cap of it one day. I had posted some pencils from Nothing Special because I really liked the body language in it. And Larry Hama commented, those are some nice pencils, kid. I screen grabbed it. And I was like, yeah.
if you really want to trip yourself out, go watch old episodes of MASH.
Yep, he's in it.
He's in it a lot. Because they just needed, you know, someone who looked Korean to play a character. Mm-hmm. So he was in, like, he played a lot of different characters in it.
He was in Broadway. He was in, I think, South Pacific. As someone who has a child who is working to be a Broadway star, I made a joke once. I was like, see that? You can have a successful career in comics and Broadway. And that's why you should flat for me.
It's a total package. They talk about the triple threat, but that's really the quadruple threat right there. Yeah.
Before we keep squirreling, do you want to do picks?
We probably should, yeah.
Okay, picks of the week. Hey, everybody, Patrick here. And before we get to picks of the week, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening and talk about a couple of ways you can help support the pod. First off, if you're subscribed via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, simply downloading new episodes each week helps with the algorithm. Those nasty algorithms. If you're doing that on one platform, thank you. But could you consider doing it on the other one as well? You don't have to double listen, but with how the podcast landscape has kind of fractured over the past few years, being subscribed and downloading the episodes each week on both platforms really helps us out. I don't think Google Podcasts exists anymore. I think I got like some emails about that. But if you're there, hey, you know what? That would help as well. Second, we have a Patreon over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. And some changes are coming there very, very soon. Starting in February, we are eliminating the $10 tier and moving all the perks from that tier to the $5 tier. That's right. The $5 tier will now include our exclusive monthly Just Us episodes for the patrons. Those are wildly popular, and we want to be able to open that up so more people can listen and enjoy those episodes. We're also going to add a new Discord server. It's currently in beta testing, and that'll give us a new place to chat and grow our community away from all the AI bots and things that Meta is doing with groups on their platform. But wait, there's more! That's right. We have even more stuff planned for our patrons in 2026 to thank them for their support. So, This is the best time to jump over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and back us at that $5 tier if you haven't already. You will get all the new goodies when they drop, because I'm not going to put a $10 tier back. It's all going to be right there on the $5 tier moving forward. Okay, I think that's it for me. So let's get back to picks of the week.
All right. So, Patrick, what is your first pick of the week for 2026?
No pressure. I'm going to go with the finale of Stranger Things. So Stranger Things Volume 5, I thought was okay. It was good. It was well done. I'm not going to give any spoilers. I thought some stuff should have happened that didn't happen. But it's always hard for these shows that have like this cultural impact to end and end well. Yeah. So I thought they did a fine job of ending it. I'm sure, and I have not looked because why would I? But I'm sure there are people who are complaining online, because that's what online is for, is complaints. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it. I thought it went well. I thought it was very cool. And I will spoil one thing. There is a moment that I enjoyed quite a bit, which is like all the little kids that have been around the show, like all the little siblings and brothers and sisters and all, and cousins and friends and all that. There's a point where they all storm the table with all the books and the minis and stuff. And then they've decided that they are going to learn to play D&D and they're going to play D&D. I really liked that, because it was like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
they're going to continue the tradition and keep playing D&D. And so I thought that was very nice. So Stranger Things Volume 5, non-spoilery review. I thought it went pretty well.
Nice. Nice. Yep. So Katie, what is making you happy now in the year of our Lord 2026?
I think I gave myself a drawing challenge in December, because everybody knows those like list of themes. And I did 31 days of stuff I don't usually draw. And I picked a weird random thing every day. And not only did I stick to it and do 31 things that I usually don't draw, I loved all of it. It was super fun. It was super stupid sometimes. And it taught me that the most viral piece of artwork that I had in all of 2025 was from it. And it was the stupid sponge monkeys from Quiznos. Do you remember the ad campaign?
Yep.
And I was like, I don't usually draw these guys. I've never drawn them. And it became everything to everyone in my life. So I am grateful for that lesson that I was a few weeks ago, that, you know what, I'm never going to be able to predict what my work is like, what responds with people.
Nope.
I'm a bad content creator.
You never know what's going to hit with people. You never do. Like, it can be anything. And I will say, once again, you've hit me in the feels, because I miss Quiznos.
Well, and the second most popular piece of artwork is I just leaned into it and I redid their speech balloons to say, we love these subs, release the Epstein files. And that got reposted everywhere.
Yes. That you may have hacked some virality there. All right. Well, Shay Townsend, we ring out the old year and ring in the new in very much the same way, one year to the next. We get together, usually with my husband's mom and a couple of friends, and we play lots of board games in the course of the evening. We have a extravagant meal that is definitely not a real meal. It's just like, let us find all the garbage food that we can. Like, here's pizza rolls, and here's pigs in a blanket, and here's like five different types of snack mix that I made with it's basically all the sodium content for the upcoming year, but just like
amazing.
Loaded into. So we had all that. We played the games for a while, and the last thing we do right before, like, it was just so we can fit it in so that when it ends, it's going to be like right at midnight, as we pick an episode of MST3K, Mystery Science Theater 3000, and watch it. This year it was Mitchell, which is also the last episode that Joel was in.
Yep.
But the actual pick of the week for me is a game that Patrick gave to my family this past summer when we were visiting out west and we got together for a somewhat cursed in terms of timing lunch. But when we showed up for lunch, he had some games to pass on to us. And one of them was the game That's Not a Hat. It's a card game that Ravensburger produces. And it's 100% the sort of game that I think my husband, when he took it from Patrick, was like, oh, thanks. And then was probably thinking, we're never going to play this fucking thing. Mm-hmm. And then he happened to actually look it up and discovered that, like, no, this is a deeply beloved party game in the world of board game geeks. And so he opened it up and discovered that there's good reason for it. So we played a couple of hands of That's Not a Hat. Here's how it works. It's a deck of cards. The deck of cards are extraordinarily simple black and white line drawings of random things. Corn cob pipe, frog, cupcake, magnifying glass, book, traffic cone, yada, yada, yada. Every one of these has a different thing. The idea is it's a game of gift giving. You're trying to give a gift to people at the table. And the back of the cards tell you if you're supposed to move it to the right or move it to the left. You get this initial gift and you have to give it to someone because that's what it's for. You give gifts away. The only the first time that you look at it, do you know what this card is? And so you'll be like, Patrick, I know that, you know, shoveling snow or, you know, finding parking spaces and stuff, that can be tough sometimes. So after you shovel out a parking space or something, here's a traffic cone. So you can, you know, go ahead and mark it. This is for you. And he'll be like, oh, thanks. Take the traffic cone card. He has to put it face down in front of him. And then it stays that way for the rest of the game. And there is a sequence by which you have to keep taking new gifts from the center and passing them around to different people. But eventually, it becomes impossible to remember with certainty, is this a traffic cone or was that a sandwich? Like, is this a fish or is that a baseball? I don't remember because the baseball was over there on the other side of the table, but then so-and-so gave the baseball to this person. And you have to just kind of tell people things and hope that you're still right. And if you're not, they might be like, that's not a hat. And they flip it over and they look at it and goddamn, if it isn't a hat, then they have to take that card, whoever, they have to take the card back, it comes out of play. You get stuck three times accidentally lying about the gifts that you're giving away, and you lose the game. This is the sort of game that is simple enough in its mechanics, you're going to think, I'm a smart person, this is easy, I will rule at this. No, you are going to be terrible at this. You and everyone you love are going to be very, very terrible at this, and that is the point.
Nice.
Actually, the point is that I'm deeply offended that the Husbeast didn't think that I researched this shit before I bought a game for the game family.
I will convey your disappointment.
I researched this before I buy it because you guys are the game family. Look behind you. You're the game family.
Oh, yeah. This is the D tier shelf. This is the stuff that almost never makes it upstairs.
I looked at that game and I went, this is the game for them. This is it. This is the one that they're going to be, because they, you know, D especially, D's like, I'm going to lie to everybody and I'm going to rule the world. And it's like, this is how this is going to work. So yeah,
it finally hit the table on New Year's Eve and it was in fact a big hit. So good, nice. Well played, evil Uncle Falsack.
Yeah, we love a board game in my house. We play a lot of them. I'm actually, later today, my mom and I face off at Scrabble once a year.
No.
Because I don't win a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I'll win against
you to recover the ego.
Else.
Yeah.
I've only won against my mom once. And we're talking like scores that get into the 500s. My brother's in the same boat. My mom, again, being, before she was a middle school principal, she was a teacher. She would play her entire class at Scrabble. And if they, as a class, beat her as one person, they wouldn't have to take a test.
Oh.
And she would beat them all the time. So board games are going to be my future.
No, she's
so
been forged in battle.
It's like you hide all the like two-letter word sheets in the house. It's like I'm thinking of cheating. I have to go to the bathroom.
My Grams loved Scrabble. And so I would play Scrabble with her. But she had a fancy Scrabble board.
We got a fancy one.
It was like one on the Lake Lazy Susan with like
yeah, and it's all
it's on the Lazy Susan, so it's turns, but it also it had the raised edges so
yeah.
that when you put the tiles in, they don't move around; they just stay in there. I just remember that. Like I remember sitting there and playing that game with her.
And then you get the $8 Scrabble or something from like the shelf at Walmart, and you're like, "What the heck is this peasant stuff?"
Pretty much.
Well, when I am having like writer's block or something's not working while I work, I have a coffee table in my office next to my chair, and I play Bananagrams with myself.
There you go.
And I'm just like, I like try and make up a theme. I don't play it the right way, and I'm like, I wonder if I can make all words that are bananas. So
as Tracy's cat feeder goes off and starts shouting for the cats to come down. Is it done yet, Tracy? Or are you still working on it? Still working on it. I will say there are also games like to help you when you have like a writer's block and stuff. There's like Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
Different like improv games that you can just like play and you just build a story real quick and it just kind of
gets your juices
flowing. Yeah. Those are really good. No, the cat feeder, it's a recording of me calling for them that loops three times. And unfortunately, I discovered it seemed like a great idea at the time because I wanted to make sure that they heard it so that I could fit in two calls for them in one recording, which meant that I'm calling for them six times in a row, a little robot me over in the corner.
Nice.
And usually we've gone a little bit over our usual recording time here because we're having such a good time talking to you. Usually that happens when we're in green room with another guest and I'm like, hang on, we have to wait for Robot Me to stop shouting for cats.
Now I do have a question about the cat feeder and I'm sorry, I know we're going long, but Husbeast figured out some stuff about it, right? So you guys can reprogram it again. Like you changed the time on it or something.
I remember he did something. He made it my job to reprogram the time, and I made it worse. The time not only was not successfully reprogrammed, I accidentally added a third feeding to the day. So these chunguses.
Here's what I'm wondering though. Like, why didn't you just record like yourself opening a package of cheese, or just record like a cat can going as you open it? Because that would have had the same effect as you calling them.
Not actually with my cats.
Really?
No.
Cats are weird.
No.
How many cats do you have?
If they catch me opening a can, then they'll be interested. But they don't hear the can opening and come running. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're always way ahead of me for when it's time to be fed. Like, I'm the one who's slow on the draw for the feeding. Like, by the time they finally get their dinner, they're like, motherfucker, you better have fed us. What have you been doing? They've been following me around the house for like an hour prior to that, which is particularly bad this time of year when I'm not yet back at work from the holidays. You know, obviously when I come home from work, it's just like I'll go straight to feeding them because otherwise they're going to murder me. They care lots about human food. Don't get me wrong. But like they're way ahead of.
I'm not even talking about human food. I mean, there's lots of things, Ronan, for example. But my cats used to, like, when I used to give them canned cat food once a day, like I would give them a little wet food.
Yeah.
You know, it's the hydration thing. And whenever you'd pop that can open, they'd come running, like just running. Now the dog, Ronan, I can't open anything like that crinkles paper-wise. Like cheese packages, the shredded cheese that you get pre-shredded. Like you can't get that. There's nothing like anything like that I open. As soon as he's here.
Now, anything I open that they can mistake for a bag of treats.
Yeah.
They'll come hustling for.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the dog will as well. That is a pain. Anyway.
I have five cats and two dogs and two kids and a husband, so I get it.
Oh, there's so many legs in that house. So many legs. So many legs.
And none of them are allowed in my office except the cats.
So it has been a ball talking to you, Katie. If folks
so
are looking to
me.
Oh, absolutely. If folks are looking to support you, find your stuff, do cool things with you and out there in the universe, where should they go and what should they do?
Katie Can Draw is all my social medias. That's where you can find me on everything except TikTok or, you know, anything hip. I don't do that. Nothing special is on Webtoon. And I make all of my updates on artwork, comic updates all through all those things.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for opening the year with us.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
New outro. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please, please consider sharing it with your friends on social media and give us a like or some stars on the platform or the podcatcher that you're listening to us on. If you'd like to keep up with the Functional Nerds on social media, the official podcast socials are as follows. At the-functional-nerds on Facebook. At functional_nerds_podcast on Instagram. Shut up. I couldn't get the same one. It just didn't work that way. So hush. And you know what? It's going to get worse here. And at thefunctionalnerds.bluesky, which is BSKY, .social. I know, I couldn't keep it copacetic. I tried, but hush. Tracy and I have our own accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can find us by searching, if you want me, it's ATFMB, because that's just my handle everywhere I go. Or you can search for Tracy Townsend and find Tracy on social as well. Our Patreon helps keep the lights on and new episodes like this one coming out week after week, which we've been pretty good at. I mean, we're very consistent. So you might consider checking us out over at patreon.com/functionalnerds just to support the pod and help us out there, you know. It does help. Thanks again for listening. And I have one question for you before I go. Is it baseball season yet? Because football's trying to kill me. Specifically, the Bears and the Broncos are trying to kill me with their fourth quarter comebacks week after week. If the Bears and the Broncos make it to the Super Bowl playing each other, I'm in trouble.
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake, Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, I really love what you do," I'm like, "I'm sorry. Do you know who I like? I think you have me confused with someone else."
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.